or Ali C today.
Each and every show, we go inside the Beltway to give you the best buzz coming out of D.C. The buzz, however, was in New Hampshire at Dartmouth, and Jeff Holtzman from Talk Radio News, of course, was there. Jeff, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Good to be with you.
Hey, everything just wrapped up. Who seemed to get piled on this time the most? Last time when we spoke at another debate in Florida, it was Rick Perry, the governor of Texas. Who was it this time?
Well, Kate, with a meteoric rise in the polls the last month, it was no surprise that Herman Cain was in the spotlight tonight. And I think pretty much every single candidate sitting next to him used their opportunity at this two-hour debate to go after him and accuse him of having not a lot of substance in his big plan to overhaul the tax code, his so-called 999 plan. And that's a plan that he's talked about a lot. He's stumped on it. He, you know, at the Values Voters Summit over the weekend that I was fortunate enough to attend, he talked about it a lot and got a big rise out of the crowd. And tonight he pointed to it several times because this was a debate that focused mainly on economic issues. But he took a lot of heat from other candidates. Mitt Romney schooled him for not having a more complex plan. Romney, of course, has a 59-point plan to turn the economy around. And Rick Santorum went after Herman Cain. John Huntsman had a memorable line in which he said, I thought 999 was the price of a pizza. And then Michelle Bachmann got a little edgier. She said, if you turn 999 around, it's 666. The devil's in the details. I'm sure that's the line that's going to attract a lot of attention these next couple days. So a lot of attacks on Herman Cain tonight. I think overall, he seemed to do a good job of standing up to them. I don't think he won tonight's debate. And we'll see how things go in the polls. I mean, now that there's all this attention on Herman Cain, he's getting more scrutiny, will he suffer in the polls? Only time will tell, but I'm betting that he could slip a little bit over the next couple weeks.
So you were there. Who did you think won?
Well, I honestly, you know, it seems like I say this every single time I'm at one of these debates, but I think Mitt Romney won tonight's debate. And, you know, I was just chatting with my colleague. It seemed like tonight was the first debate that I've come away thinking that Romney won instead of, you know, not lost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that in several debates, he's sort of coasted. He hasn't made any major gaffes. And because he's been sort of the front runner going into things, he's come out, you know, as the winner. But tonight, I really think that he did a good job because he also got beat up a lot. Rick Perry went after him on health care. I thought Mitt Romney had a good response on that. He said, you know what? I'd repeal President Obama's health care law as president. I'd issue waivers to states. And then he also noted that his law was the right thing to do, he felt, for the state of Massachusetts, which he says overwhelmingly approves of the law. He had a lot to say about his economic proposals. I just thought Mitt Romney looked like he belonged at the front of the field tonight. I also thought Ron Paul had a strong debate. I think Ron Paul plays really well to a conservative audience when the issue is economics rather than, say, foreign policy, war, defense, things like that, where he sounds more, I think, liberal. So I thought Ron Paul did a good job. Newt Gingrich sounded very academic tonight. I think Newt Gingrich had some good lines. He always looks good in these debates. It just doesn't resonate in the polls, and I don't think anything's going to change about that. So I guess I'll sum that up by saying I think Romney will stay at the top of the polls for the foreseeable future.
How about Rick Perry? One of the things that Rick Perry said is he said the government has to open the way for more production of domestic energy. We've heard that before, and that you have to pull back the regulations that are strangling American entrepreneurship. And, of course, that seemed to be the theme a little bit, too, with some others. That was pretty obvious, and we've heard that on the campaign trail. But do you think that he steadied the ship a little bit anyway?
Well, I'm not really sure. The question I have for Rick Perry is you know, he says that he's, in the next couple days or weeks, he'll start unveiling his major economic plan. And I think a lot of people are asking, why wait? Why not just do it right now? You know, seemingly his number one opponent, Mitt Romney, the guy he's vying for to over, you know, to take over, has this major economic plan that he's been able to point to and spell out in these debates. And Rick Perry, you know, he mentioned what he would do to boost jobs in the energy sector. And, you know, obviously he's got the proper credentials to talk about energy because the state of Texas has grown, you know, in terms of job creation. He says it's added a million jobs in his time in Governor while the rest of the country's been losing jobs. And most of that, you know, most of those jobs have come in the energy sector. Texas is a big oil producing state. So I'm not, you know, he's got the plan, to get domestic energy production up. But other than that, I think he's lacking. And I think Rick Perry needs to turn it on and say, you know, here's my plan. Make of it what you will, but I have a plan. You know, I don't think Rick Perry had a terrible debate tonight. But I think he still needs to do more.
All right, so Perry needs a little help. The rest of the gang, I mean, it was the usual suspects were there, so no sign of anyone getting battle fatigued. And I mean, this is an opinion question, but any signs of anyone slipping out, Jeff?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, you can make the case that guys like John Huntsman, who are, you know, not even really registering in the polls, might not have a lot of gas left in the tank. But I don't think that tonight really knocked anybody out. I mean, I still think you're going to see Rick Santorum campaigning. You know, Santorum, to his credit, you know, he's an instigator, and I think that he is he's an interesting guy in these debates because he usually takes the first shot at the other candidates. Tonight he went after Herman Cain, and he also, you know, went after Mitt Romney. And so I think he's going to stay in it. I think Huntsman will stay in it for a while. You know, you got to keep in mind, this has been an interesting cycle because Herman Cain reportedly was close to dropping out a month mm-hmm. ago, and then mm-hmm. he won the Florida straw poll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And Michelle Bachmann, you know, you hear rumors about her. She says she's in it all the way through. I mean, I think they're going to have to pry her out of it, frankly, the way it's going with Michelle Bachmann. She seems strong as an oak, doesn't she?
Yeah, Bachmann, it's an interesting situation with her. I mean, obviously she lost a couple key campaign advisors in the last couple weeks or so. She hasn't scored any major endorsements. I mean, that's the thing you have to watch. I mean, Romney scored a major endorsement today with Chris Christie. That's huge for Romney. I mean, you've got Pawlenty, you've got Chris Christie. You know, some of the more conservative folks out there might groan at those two names because, you know, Christie and Pawlenty are sort of moderate on certain issues. But, you know, those are big endorsements. You know, Herman Cain is an interesting specter because we don't really know how he's sustaining this campaign. We don't really have any fundraising numbers. We know that some of it is self-funded. We know that he's got some small donors here and there, but he doesn't really have a major campaign apparatus. He doesn't really have a staff. In fact, there was a major story today about the fact that some potential donors were looking to contact people in the Cain campaign about where they could put their money, and they couldn't get in touch with anybody. And it's funny, I saw a sign here in Hanover, a Herman Cain sign that said, call this number if you're interested in donating. I don't have that number off the top of my head. But I think the short answer is I don't think anybody's going to drop out immediately. But we are very, very close to the first primary. I mean, the Iowa caucus looks like it's going to be January 3rd.
Yeah, wow, it's crazy. Are you going to be at the Iowa caucus too?
I sure will, and I hope that you are there.
Wow, you are the traveling talk radio news man.
what can I say? You know, New Hampshire this time of year is beautiful, so you can't pass it up. And Iowa has fried butter. Can't go wrong.
Oh, fried butter. I'm going to have to start jogging now, get in shape before I get there. Jeff Holtzman, as always, a pleasure. Great job, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks a lot, Kate. See ya.
All right, thank you. That's what we're talking about next here in America Tonight. More on the debates in New Hampshire, so stick with us. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hey, everybody. Jason Lewis here once again. These are hard times for investors. If you're like me, you just don't know where to put your money because there's a downside to every possible scenario. Now, look, every portfolio needs a hedge for inflation. Gold has been the classic. I want to tell you, I want to be honest with you, commodities fluctuate, so you could lose money. Gold goes up and down. But every stable portfolio usually has an inflation hedge, and gold is, well, the gold standard. Washington is not going to get us out of this recovery, so you've got to protect yourself. Give it some thought, and if you're interested in converting your IRA to gold or would like to actually have it in your possession, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. The U.S. dollar was once backed by gold, but it's lost a lot of its value since then. Call Midas Resources today, 1-800-686-2237 for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, and tell them Jason Lewis sent you.
Heart and Body Extract continues to receive positive testimonials from people who have experienced amazing results, like Reed.
I just wanted to send you a quick but a very big thank you for Heart and Body Extract. I've been on the formula for nearly a month now, and the improvement in the circulation of my legs has been simply amazing.
Reed was facing a tough choice.
I was facing surgery due to the severity of the 100% blocked arteries in both my legs. And my decision, waiting for surgery, to say no and try Heart and Body Extract instead has been thankfully the right decision.
And the result?
I can now walk up steps without noticeable pain.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, for a long and healthy life.
Side here on ATM with me, Kate Delaney. Big news besides what happened with another Republican debate and who won or lost, as we were just talking about there with Jeff Holtzman. You know, in his opinion, it's Mitt Romney. He's a Romney backer, and he admitted to that. And he said because of the economics and so much of that is polished stuff for Romney, he thought he came out on top. And, of course, as he mentioned, the big news in the day is Governor Chris Christie, whose sales are flying high after the will-he-won't-he-run, throws the weight of his endorsement to Romney. We're continuing our straw poll, so remember, you can weigh in as to who you think will be president if you had to vote right now. We do have four takers for Obama. If you think Obama, who's occupying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue right now, is the scapegoat for everything that's happening with the economy and where the country's heading and all that stuff, then by all means, I always say left of left, right of right. Hey, you're all invited to the overnight party. We're not excluding anybody. However, this crowd is mostly picking up for Kane. So far, we have 68 votes now for Herman Cain. For Ron Paul, who is a close second, he's got 65 votes. Rick Perry, steady at 23. Mitt Romney, 24. I say that because they've had that for a couple of days. Michelle Bachmann, I really do believe she hangs on with a death grip to the idea of being president. I think she's got now 14 with us, so 14. Shoot them my way. Go to the website, piece of cake, americatonight.net. Drop in on the email and send us your thoughts, or you can always jingle the digits, 800-259-5791. Because the other big news, and not much of the focus of what happened in New Hampshire at Dartmouth with the usual suspects on the Republican side of things, is the conversation over terror. Earlier in the day, huge news. Because what was reported is a alleged plan that really squarely would have done some serious damage to Israel and Saudi Arabia was thwarted. But, of course, we're talking about right here in the good old USA. Attorney General Eric Holder explains who the target was.
Today, the Department of Justice is announcing charges against two people who allegedly attempted to carry out a deadly plot that was directed by factions of the Iranian government to assassinate a foreign ambassador here.
Yeah, interesting. That was exactly the idea. The idea was there was a scheme, an assassination for hire scheme, that was, as Holder said, targeting Saudi Arabia's ambassador to the U.S. It's a naturalized U.S. citizen who was holding an Iranian and U.S. passport, so dual, and a member of Iran's Revolutionary Guard. He's the guy that's going to face conspiracy charges connected with this plot. Holder said, you know, really, it unfolded almost like a Hollywood script, and said that he was committed to holding Iran accountable for its actions. We've heard that before with Iran. So I love this part. The nutball, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, naturally is going to jump all over this, trots out a spokesperson who says, this is just a fabrication by the U.S. They're trying to distract American citizens. Come on. Play the game. This is what they're doing. Distraction. I'm so sick of that word. Is everything just a distraction? It's a distraction? Come on. So the Royal Embassy of Saudi Arabia in Washington, of course, I mean, it was all gifts, hugs, and kisses for the people who stopped this thing, for stepping in, because there was bombs connected. I mean, they would have blown the bits out of this embassy if they didn't get the ambassador, because he wasn't the only target, by the way. They also talked about Israeli and Saudi embassies, the Israeli embassies in Washington, and possibly another one, Buenos Aires. That was another possibility as well. So Saudi, why is Saudi targeted? That's what they're trying to figure out now at this point, but they made some quick decisions. The good news is they thwarted the attempt, and that's it. They were able to stop it. Otherwise, who knows who would have been taken out? Let's face it, if there was the attempt to blow up the embassy, which is what it was looking like, and it would have been in our country in Washington. Now, what's really strange, there's another twisted subplot to this plot, believe it or not. They developed the case, against the two people, because there were two in the group, by the way, that were planning to kill the ambassador. So they developed the case thanks to an undercover informant posing as an associate of a Mexican drug cartel. You want something done? Go to the drug cartel in Mexico. And that's what the FBI is saying. That's how this all unfolded. The undercover informant was discussing using explosives to kill the ambassador and possibly attacking a crowded restaurant. And the informant, price-wise, you know, what does that cost you? Named $1.5 million as the price. So there was a down payment that was sent, and, you know, it was all strung together after that. So the alleged scheme involved a branch of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, as I already mentioned, and we know this from now a long time. They're suspected of being involved in a number of foreign ops, and this would have just been another one of them. So bravo that they were able to stop it. Ahmadinejad can stuff it. You can talk about distractions, but this was not a distraction. I'm not buying it if they're selling that. I am not buying it. This was pretty widespread. There were other things that were going on here. And now they have directly linked it, maybe even, not directly to the president, but pretty close, let's say, pretty close, according to my Pentagon guy, that they're pretty close to that. That's what the scuttlebutt is underneath all of this. And the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, is saying that, you know, we need to do something here to isolate the Iranian regime. I mean, we got problems here. And like I said, we've heard that before, and nothing ever happens. This guy can say whatever he wants. It doesn't matter. You can walk out when he comes to the UN once a year and spews all his nonsense, but it doesn't matter. So here's the gist. They got this plot to kill the Saudi ambassador. Probably could have hit some Americans on this, and it's good that they did that. But isn't it interesting how weaved through the Mexican cartel through that whole informant chain? Wow. Gosh, you never know, right? What lies beneath, they say, and we've had somebody on the show that recently told us that if you knew the amount of plots, the things that were going on in your own backyards, none of us would ever sleep again. A couple of quick hits for you here, because coming up we're going to go to our Hollywood man, Stephen Shohat. And believe it or not, we have baseball playoffs, so we thought it'd be fun to talk about some huge baseball movies, Bull Durham and Field of Dreams. But it was no Field of Dreams for the president. Obama's jobs bill bit the dust in the Senate. I don't think that's a surprise. We knew it. We already previewed it the day before. It wasn't happening. There was no 60 votes there. Meanwhile, the Senate did pass the China currency bill. And what does that mean when we say, well, what's that? The China currency bill. What are you talking about there? There was actually some bipartisan cooperation on this. They voted 63-35 to actually hit new duties on imports, slap them with new duties, you know, fees, on imports from nations whose currency is undervalued. Get it? And that is squarely at the yuan. That's the currency they use in China because they're trying to just cut our knees out. So that's what the bill is supposed to do, help our businesses that are hurt by the imbalance and all the business that has been lost to the Asian nations. But, you know, what happens with the House? I don't know that they're going to take it up. In fact, John Boehner is saying that, you know, look, this bill is dangerous. And the reason why they think it's dangerous is because of all the deals with China and because of the debt they hold over our heads. At some point, you know what? You got to take the risk. Sink or swim. We cannot always tread water with China. Of course, China opposes the bill and is warning of a trade war if the bill passes. That's why they're backing off the House. You know, in the House, they don't want it. Go to Hollywood next. Stay with us.
Still ready to save? Then you're ready for the fall super sale at HerbalHealer.com. HerbalHealer.com has been the leader in quality natural supplements since 1988. Log on to HerbalHealer.com and take advantage of incredible fall savings on all sale products running through October 18th. HerbalHealer.com is proud to offer eFoods Global products, premium storable foods that are delicious, contain no MSG, no trans fats, no GMO, and have a 25-year shelf life. All you do is just add water. To learn more, click the eFoods link on HerbalHealer.com, and you can try eFoods storable meals for free. And don't forget to click the specials link for even more savings at HerbalHealer.com. Be sure to sign up for our free newsletter, and as always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time. Hurry, sale ends October 18th.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is a special announcement for all Americans who owe back taxes to the IRS or state. Pay attention. There is a special toll-free hotline set up especially for you. This hotline will give you free information on how you can legally reduce or eliminate your tax debt. Call the Consumer Tax Hotline today at 1-800-652-3707. Grab a pen or put the number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-652-3707. When you call, you will speak with qualified companies that will tell you how to stop the collection calls, IRS letters, bank levies, and wage garnishments. Plus, these companies will deal directly with the IRS on your behalf, so you won't have to. Even if you haven't filed returns or you're already in a payment plan, you can still get relief. The current government administration is very amicable and wants to work out a program in your best interest, but this won't last forever, and your tax problem only gets worse if you do nothing or try to handle it yourself. It does make a big difference in who you call, so call the Consumer Tax Hotline today for free information. 1-800-652-3707. That's 1-800-652-3707.
Local Army Navy surplus stores are hard to find these days, but not military issue supplies. They're right here online at mainmilitary.com. That's right, just like the state, M-A-I-N-E, military.com. We have everything for true, total preparedness. MaineMilitary.com is not a typical website. It has much more than your old surplus store. Quality military-issue survival gear like canteens, mess kits, utensils, gas masks, filters, and chemical suits, magnesium fire-starting tools, strike anywhere, waterproof, and storm matches, first aid kits, splints, tourniquets, parachute 550 cord, military manuals, sandbags by the bale, and a huge Molly assortment of vests and pouches for every need. Call 207-989-6783, 207-989-6783, or visit mainmilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E military.com, the main name in military supply.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
There's one day a year where you don't have to pay a toll to go over New York City's Verrazano Narrows Bridge. All you need is a pair of running shoes and a lot of stamina. That's next on Sports Shorts with me, the Sports Princess.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Nestle Pure Life Water, helping you drink better and live better by providing a zero-calorie alternative to sugary drinks. Visit us at nestle-purelife.us. When kids are playing, they often don't want to stop to keep hydrated. So send them out with a bottle of water and encourage them to take frequent drink breaks or call them inside for a quick sip. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.
45,000 runners ran 26.2 miles in the New York City Marathon last year. This November 6th, the number will be even bigger for the 41st race. More than 100,000 people apply, but most have to be picked through a lottery system. With over $600,000 in prize money at stake and over 2 million spectators, it's one of the largest marathons in the world. It started back in 1970, but back then, you might have gotten dizzy just running over and over again around Central Park. Now you race through all five New York boroughs, crossing over the Verrazano Bridge with thousands on the upper and lower levels. It's the money shot every year. Now wonder world-class professional runners and amateurs are drawn to the race that finishes up by crossing Central Park. I'm the Sports Princess with Sports Shorts.
Yep.
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
Ah, did you recognize that little snippet of Bull Durham? That means in the wings, Each and every week he joins us, Stephen Shohet. We're talking baseball movies in honor of the playoffs. We've got some real good ones for you, including Bull Durham, one of my favorite movies of all time. Some classic movie lines out of that, to be sure. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
Hey, very good, Kate. How you doing?
I'm sure you liked Bull Durham. I won't even ask you that question.
I really did. Although, you know what? I recently watched it with a female friend of mine, and we had to turn it off after 5 minutes because she was totally turned off by the character of Annie Savoy. She thought she didn't think good things about her. So what can I say? I found it a charming romantic comedy and a lot of good baseball stuff. Of course, Kevin Costner got to do that speech where he talks about the small of a woman's back, and that Oswald acted alone, and a bunch of other baseball things, and the funny thing was that the writer Ron Shelton, who was in the Baltimore Orioles minor league organization for 5 years, didn't like the speech, or at least he publicly put it down and said, "I've never heard anybody talk that way. To be honest with you, I did it. I wrote it into the script just to hook an actor because I knew the actors, whoever ended up." Starring in the movie would like to say something like this. So, but obviously it's something that people remember. It was going to be Kurt Russell, and at one point they were talking about some other actors, but eventually Kevin Costner did it, and of course he really was at the time, and I'm sure he can still do it to some extent, really was a good baseball player.
Oh yeah, didn't he play? He played in California, for some college in California, I think.
Right, at Fullerton, but he just had a lot of skill. I mean, I mean they had a lot of real baseball players in that movie, as a matter of fact, and Kevin Costner said even though he didn't feel like he was one of them, at the same time he didn't feel like he was out of his league, and other people observing him professionals thought that he could have been a professional. In fact, that might have been one of the reasons why baseball movies started to become a little bit more popular, is because you had actors like Kevin Costner and Kurt Russell, and Kurt Russell didn't actually wasn't in a baseball movie, but he was interested, and Charlie Sheen, guys like that, they really wanted to play baseball, and they had the athletic chops to do it. But anyway, Bull Durham turned out to be very, very good for everybody involved. It was a very tough movie to get off the ground, because at the time, baseball was not considered to be a marketable subject, but there was a studio in town at that time. Unfortunately, they went out of business, called Ryan, and they used to take chances on little known films, and just everything came together. I mean, Tim Robbins, pretty much an unknown guy at the time, had just spit in Howard the Duck. Susan Sarandon, she got that role because hardly any other actress in Hollywood was interested in doing it, and she seemed to nail the character pretty early on, at least to Ron Shelton's satisfaction. And of course, it comes off like it's so real. Some of the stuff in the movie probably isn't real. Like some baseball players talked about, there's a pretty explicit scene early on in the movie in the locker room involving the Tim Robbins character and being with a woman, and some of the baseball players said, you know, something like that would never happen in a locker. It's ridiculous. But other things like the beliefs in voodoo, the superstition, the talking to themselves, all of that was captured pretty well, and it was a lot of fun for everybody. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the superstitions, I covered the Yankees and I covered the Texas Rangers and the Mets and have been in a ton of clubhouses, and that is definite. The superstitions are there with so many of the baseball players, without a doubt. So then you fast forward from Bull Durham to Field of Dreams, and that was even more than a baseball movie. I think that tugged in a lot of different directions at a lot of different people, don't you?
Yeah, and when they were making that movie, it was right after Bull Durham, and so Kevin Costner again with another baseball movie. But since Bull Durham hadn't come out since at the time he was making Field of Dreams, he still wasn't considered a big star. In fact, Burt Lancaster was the one that was really being promoted. And it was kind of a touching thing. I mean, it turned out Burt Lancaster, who played the Moonlight Graham, who was a real baseball player, who batted once in 1905, it was his last major movie. He made a little minor movie afterwards, but the scene where he walks off into the cornfield is pretty much the last people ever saw him on screen. So it had a lot of poignancy. And Burt Lancaster, I actually met him on a plane a few years before that movie, and right, this is going to sound bad, but right after he met me, he had a heart attack when he was making another movie in Mazatlan, and from then on, he was almost impossible to insure in movies, so he wanted to pay for his own insurance. He felt really bad about it, and the producers wouldn't let him do it. They paid the money out of their own pocket. They did have to pay a little extra to get him into the film. And then, of course, you had James Earl Jones. He played a character named Terrence Mann. Now, it was actually J.D. Salinger. In fact, the Field of Dreams was based on a book called Shoeless Joe. And, of course, it's about Shoeless Joe Jackson, the famous White Sox player who had been blacklisted after the 1919 World Series. J.D. Salinger was a character in the novel. Well, of course, J.D. Salinger, the writer of The Catcher in the Rye, was famously reclusive and was threatening that if he was ever used in any other medium as a character, he would bring his lawyers down in a fierce way. So the movie makers took that quite seriously and changed his name to Terrence Mann and sort of implied he was J.D. Salinger, but in a way that they couldn't get any lawsuit there. But once again, you had the movie some people thought it was vastly overrated, and then other people, including Kevin Costner, compared it to It's a Wonderful Life. And of course, the one thing that the director did, Phil Robinson, was he thought, I've got this fantasy movie. How do I make people believe it? Well, what you do is you have the two characters, Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones, they don't believe it, and they have to be convinced, and they're so doubting about everything that's going on with the fantasy elements that once they come to accept it, then the audience comes to accept it too. Now, the one thing audiences couldn't accept was Shoeless Joe Jackson, played by Ray Liotta, batting right-handed. Mm-hmm. That was a kind of difficult thing to get over for people. And by the way, I don't know if people remember, there's a line that Shoeless Joe said how much he hated Ty Cobb and all the players hated Ty Cobb. Actually, Shoeless Joe and Ty Cobb were really good friends. In fact, Ty Cobb came to visit Shoeless Joe near the end of his life in South Carolina, and they had a real touching moment where Ty Cobb said, "Hey Joe, don't you recognize me?" And he goes, "Oh, of course I do, Ty. I just thought nobody wanted to associate with me anymore, so I didn't want to, that's why I didn't talk to you." And so not everything was accurate, but obviously it was a very lovely movie for a lot of people.
I agree, and you know this because you're a sports fan. Sports fans are sticklers, especially baseball people, for that kind of thing. So I can see how that would a couple of those things would have stuck in their craw.
Well, Ray Liotta really regretted it that he didn't get the left-handed batting down,
but I
think most people, I think by that time, a lot of people were like, Kevin Costner, that's what they came to see and maybe weren't caring so much about baseball history. Although I think only a handful of people probably did.
I agree with you. All right. So what's on tap next week for baseball?
Oh, well, we could talk about The Natural and Eight Men Out and maybe we'll figure out some more during the week.
All right, I like that. The Natural. I did like The Natural, but I like Robert Redford, definitely. And Eight Men Out was really, really good, too, so I look forward to that.
That's such an underrated movie, I think. It doesn't have a central character, so that's one reason maybe people didn't attach to it, but I thought it was so interesting.
I did, too. We'll talk about that next week. Stephen Shohead, Hollywood Stories, short entertaining anecdotes about the stars and legends of the movies. He's the best storyteller, period, in Hollywood and outside of Hollywood. Pick up his book. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Kate.
We'll talk to you next week, of course, and talking about those baseball movies. All right, speaking of books, my pal Brian Moreland has a new book out called Dead of Winter. Oh, this is a scary read, my friends. He's got the details next. Stay with us.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for quick action. Listen to what the revolutionary MDS Forte can do for you. MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte at BestBloodSupport.com or call 213-405-5355. Call 213-405-5355 or go to BestBloodSupport.com. That's BestBloodSupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
Everybody who's listened to America Tonight, you know I love Halloween. Oh, I love Halloween. Why? Because you have vampires, you have cannibals, you have exorcists, you have, you know, the whole shooting gallery, so to speak. And I don't know why, but since I was a kid, I've always been attracted to horror novels, horror movies, and whatnot. My buddy, Brian Moreland, is a fantastic writer in that genre, especially. I mean, that is his specialty. He's got a new book out called Dead of Winter that will have you on the edge of your seat shaking. If you're listening to us back east and you're taking the train, you'll probably miss your stop because you'll get so engrossed in this novel, because it has it all. You know, I grew up in Jersey, and I think of the woods. And when I think of the woods, I think of the Pine Barrens and how scared we were to go into the Pine Barrens because we heard about crazy murders. I'm sure a lot of it was just made-up nonsense and Bigfoot and whatnot. Well, in Dead of Winter, of course, you have frozen woods that become a massive killing ground, if you will, and you have cannibals, and you've span centuries. You start off in the 1800s. And for all of you listening in Canada, this takes place in Canada. So he's in our virtual green room right now. He's going to have to put down that latte and some of that candy corn we put in there for him. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kate. It's great to be here on your show.
Thanks. Hey, did you, when you were a kid, were you afraid of the woods too?
Yeah, we actually, our house backed up to the woods on a creek, and I used to go back exploring all the time, and I used to imagine there were monsters back there, or wild, rabid dogs, and anytime I'd hear dogs barking or anything, I would think they were just some, you know, some wild dogs chasing us. I had a little sister, and we'd always pretend out there, and we actually had all kinds of scary stories.
So you always had that kind of imagination. You must, just like me, you must have been drawn a little bit into the drama of the whole horror thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it started with, like, all the classic horror movies growing up, you know watching Frankenstein and Werewolf and some of the movies from the 70s that had monsters in them or aliens or anything. I always just loved getting scared.
I can relate to that. The Dead of Winter, as I said, coming up for this plot, and how did you come up with the plot? You know, as I said, I kind of fleshed it out a little bit with some broad strokes about cannibals and, you know, flesh feeding, killing grounds, the woods. I didn't even throw in the fact that you have an exorcist who is one of my favorite characters, Father Xavier, who ends up going to an asylum, and he's trying to figure things out, too. How did you come up with this twisted plot?
Well, actually, it was a combination of several true events that I came across when I was actually looking for a new book idea for my next novel, and I was reading this story, this book about native monsters, kind of what monsters that the Native American Indians were afraid of, and they had all kinds of, you know, boogeymen or creatures that lived out in the woods that they were afraid of.
Mm.
They told campfire stories about them, and there was this one that they really believed was true. This supernatural creature that lives out in the woods that comes out in winter, and the tribes would actually migrate every year when come wintertime because that was its feeding ground, the Ontario woods, and even in Michigan and Minnesota, some of the tribes, the Ojibwe tribes, you know, they all share the same superstition. And I thought that was, there was something about that story that fascinated me. And then as I did more research on that native legend, I came across the Jesuits also had this, they were journaling that they also feared something out in the woods. And then, and they noticed that there was disease of cannibalism spreading, especially at the forts. There were lots of forts scattered across Canada during that time. This is around 1870 when this takes place.
Mm.
And so it was basically, I got it all from history. I just like was like, wow, this is just too cool this disease, this cannibalism disease actually really exists.
Yeah, and you probably learned more about cannibalism than you even wanted to know, although it was great,
right?
Because you were really able to spell it out in the book. And so the whole idea of the cannibalism, and you're talking about the forts that are spread out, that I think in a weird way that makes sense to me, because you're talking about probably desperation, no crops or food, and then they
right.
turn on each other. Is that pretty much what happened?
That's right. Well, these colonies would stay in these fur trading forts for the entire winter. And, you know, sometimes halfway through winter, they'd run out of food, no game to hunt, and they would turn to desperation. And there was lots of people who eventually would cannibalize one another. And there's been times when like the next group would come in the springtime and discover there's only one guy left alive and he's eaten all the others.
Ooh, one guy, the last man standing. Yikes. And that's not like a singing contest. So, I mean, that's an eating contest. Yikes.
Yeah.
So you have cannibalism in there. And I mentioned, too, that you've got in Montreal. In fact, we have a lot of listeners in Montreal. You have this Father Xavier character, and he's an exorcist. So I can imagine as well that you found out a bunch about exorcisms. And what did you find out that you thought was fascinating as far as that was concerned?
Well, the exorcism part came from the fact that the Jesuits were heavily involved in being missionaries at these forts. And they were the ones that were journaling. I came across one real journal that the priest had shown up at this fort, and everybody at the fort, they were saying were like possessed by demons, and they had to kill them all. They had to kill all these people because they had some kind of disease that was causing them to attack each other. And so I said, well, I've got to have a priest in the story. And then I just came up with the idea that he's got to be an exorcist because whatever he's going to, this disease he's battling, this killer that's out in the woods, is going to be supernatural. And I wanted a priest who could confront that. But he's not the only character. I also have from Montreal is a detective, Inspector Tom Hatcher, and he and the exorcist work together to solve the murder mystery and fight and battle the kind of this cannibal plague that's spreading throughout the fort.
Yeah. We should tell everyone again, we're speaking with Brian Moreland, author of Dead of Winter. Lucky for all of you, you can get it before Halloween. You get it right now on your Kindle, and then the version of it, the paperback version of it, will come out in January, right?
That's right, January 3rd.
January 3rd. So in Dead of Winter, love the title. It is, when you're writing, and it took you, what, 2 years to put this? How long did it take you to put this book together?
It took me 2.5. And a lot of that was research, just reading lots of books and doing a lot of search on Google. And, you know, I didn't know a lot of the history. When I decided to set it in 1870, I was like, well, I got to learn about the fur trade because it's all based around these fur trappers that are living at this colony. And then I had to learn, also have several scenes in Montreal, and I wanted to know what was Montreal like in 1870? And then I had to learn about the Ojibwe Indians because I've got several characters who are Ojibwe and then shamanism. I studied shamanism. I studied exorcism. I was actually, you know, you asked earlier about exorcists. I actually read several books by exorcists who are living today and practicing exorcism today. And they told some wild stories that kind of make you wonder if there really are supernatural forces out there that took over some of these people's bodies.
All right, now you're scaring me even more. Now, is there I love shapeshifters. There's shapeshifting in this too.
Yes. Yeah, the disease, once it spreads into its victim, they actually start to shapeshift physically. And that's part of the mystery of why that's happening and what's behind it all.
Yeah, we don't want to give away all the details because, you know, that spoils it for everyone. It's not like, you know, when people can't stand it and they read the end of the book and then they go back and read the whole book, that's bad. So spoiler alert, we don't want to do that to all the people listening. Dead of Winter, the title. I mean, with all these things that are mixed up in this brilliant book, how do you boil it down to a title? The title's so important, isn't it? How did you come up with the title?
Winter was definitely going to be part of the title because this was all about, I mean, this was a supernatural creature or spirit or whatever the Indians believed. It's something that came out in the wintertime. And then the history of the fur trading forts, the wintering, the people who stay there, the fur traders, they're British and they were Irish and, all these different nationalities and, French Canadian. And they were called winterers, they would stay there for the winter.
Yeah.
And then that's when the cannibalism would just kind of run rampant. And I thought, well, it's got to have winter in the title. And Dead of Winter is sort of like the sense, it's kind of, you know, it's the middle of winter. And it's also, you know, the dead in there, of course, implies that there's some kind of murder or mayhem going on in there also.
Yeah, I like it. Author Brian Moreland, will you come back on with us again?
Absolutely.
All right, so go to Amazon and get it on your Kindle right now, and then you can get the paperback when it comes out in January. Thanks, and happy Halloween.
Thank you.